Hello and welcome to the Indian Dream Podcast. We are here with another Business Munchies episode. This is where we study different markets, identify different business opportunities and break them down for you. In today's episode, we talk about the healthy snacks industry, a fast growing segment within the broader move to healthy food. In addition to this, we talk about Sahil's recent trip to the US where he experienced mushroom coffee and fully automated hotels. Before we move on to the episode, there's one thing that I wanted to address. We've received messages from our listeners saying that the episodes tend to be quite long, and I agree. And I completely understand that not all topics that we discuss on Business Munchies might be interesting for everyone. So here are a few things that we are doing to make it easier for you to listen to what you like. One, we are actively posting clips on YouTube. So we're breaking down the Business Munchies episodes, we're breaking down the Founder Journeys episode and creating clips of those on YouTube. So check the show notes, you can go onto the YouTube channel and subscribe there. Second, we will add detailed outlines in the show note where you can jump directly to the section you like. So every topic is going to have a timestamp to it. You click on that and you get to that part of the episode directly. And of course, I highly recommend you listen to the episodes at least at 1.5x speed. Give yourself some time, you'll be completely fine listening to podcasts at 1.5x. With that, let's hear it from our sponsor, Push Owl, and jump onto the episode. Push Owl is a web push marketing app built for e-commerce businesses. Trusted by more than 25,000 brands across the globe, Push Owl lets you turn one-time store visitors into subscribers, send highly visible web push notifications, and increase customer retention. Check them out on pushowl.com, that's pushowl.com. Alright, let's jump onto the episode. You're in the US and you've gone there after 2-3 years. So tell us what have you experienced? What's new out there?
Well, the immediate first thing I've noticed is that everything is so much more expensive, man. It is crazy. They talk about the inflation on the news, but I'm actually seeing it. Earlier when you used to live here, when we used to get a meal around our college, it used to be like $10, $15 for a meal outside, right? Now I'm paying like $20, $25 at least for a meal. The price inflation is crazy. What you're seeing in the news is really true. A couple of other things I noticed, right? So I went for an industry exhibition. That's why I'm in the US. And one thing that I've noticed a lot at this exhibition. So we've spoken about exhibitions before on Business Munchies. We spoke about virtual exhibitions. That was a big thing in the pandemic. We spoke about, you know, the hybrid model, about people doing like half virtual, half in person. I didn't see a single stall at this exhibition doing a hybrid or a virtual exhibition, right? So this was like fully physical. Everybody, I think, was so happy to be there and to be actually doing the exhibition. But one change I noticed was that people were a lot more comfortable with QR codes. So I printed QR codes on my card and people were so happy I printed QR codes on my business card. So I noticed that one small change. What else have I noticed in the US? So the other day, my sister gave me this coffee to drink. It's called Four Sigmatic Mushroom Coffee Mix. And we actually spoke about this mushroom coffee on a very, very early episode of Business Munchies. And it's funny that now my sister is also drinking it.
Yeah, Sahil, I still remember the number that I'd quoted back then on their annual revenue, and I've tried to validate it multiple times post that. I keep getting the number in this range, and it's unbelievable. They do $60 million in sales of just mushroom coffee across the globe. And this is a company that came out of Sweden or someplace else, and then was acquired by a couple of people in the US, and now it's a global brand, or at least in Europe and in the US. This whole mushroom coffee thing, this whole thing of using mushroom as an adaptogen, as a one of those ashwagandha category of these products is very, very interesting.
So it's not just in coffee, right? It's mushrooms are being used in a lot of things. And there was this fantastic Netflix documentary you guys should watch called Fantastical Fungi. I think that's what it's called, Fantastic Fungi, something like that. And this has gotten a lot of people into mushrooms. So mushroom coffee is one part of it. Just having mushroom powder is another part of it. My wife has gotten really into mushrooms. She's like learning a lot more about mushrooms as well. So yeah, mushrooms has become a big thing in the last couple of years. We spoke about this like, I think 2 years ago. I can't believe it's been almost 2 years ago that we spoke about it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been 2 years. And I think sometime last year, I saw this company in India called Rooted Active Naturals. If people want to explore mushrooms and its derivative products and how it can help and how it can help your health. Go check out Rooted Active Naturals. This is not an ad. I haven't really tried the products. It's just interesting that we are seeing these mushroom-derived products, packaged products in India as well. So if whoever is interested can check it out. And then we'd also done an episode with a mushroom grower. He used to grow, I think, 100 tons of mushroom a day or some very large number. He's the third largest mushroom producer in Maharashtra. It's called the Jiva. The episode is called Jiva Foods, Mushroom Farming Jiva Foods. I'm going to link it in the show notes if you want to check that out. Please go ahead and do it.
Before we go into the topic of the day, healthy snacks, I do want to say one last thing that I saw in the US. And this one was the most interesting, actually. Maybe I should have started with this. I don't know. But the hotel I was staying at in New Orleans for my exhibition was a fully automated hotel, right? And I do want to talk about this because it was so weird. It was so crazy. So basically, I booked it on Airbnb. And when I booked it, they sent me, you know, those instructions on Airbnb, how to get to the hotel, blah, 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 right? So first step was getting into the building. So it was just one of those keypads on the outside. And okay, that gets you into the building. That's normal. It's pretty normal in New York and other places to get into a building. Then once you enter the building, there's no receptionist, right? So this is a hotel. There are like, I think, 100 rooms in this hotel. There was no receptionist. Okay. So you walk in and there is this, I don't know, for the people who watch this podcast called the H3H3 podcast, they have this one guy who's on a screen. It's just like a big iPad screen, which is on a long stick, which is on a wheel. Okay. So you walk in and there's this screen on a wheel, which has this lady in Philippines. It's a virtual assistant, I guess, in the Philippines. Okay. And she says hi to you and you check in at her and she gave me my room number and I go to my room. There's no key. There's nothing. There's no, you know, the keypad kind of thing. Those key cards, sorry. Then I go to my room on the fourth floor and I get to the door and it's a automatic lock, a smart lock. I don't know if you've seen that before, Siddharth. I don't know if they had that in Indore. But basically, the number to enter my room was the last four digits of my phone number. So I just enter the last four digits of my phone number. I enter the room. And then on the right-hand side, there's this big, like, it looks like a mirror, but it's a screen. It actually, when you turn it off, it basically becomes a mirror. And on that, it says, "Welcome, Sahil. Click here to check in." So then I click there to check in. And then it gives me all these things that I can do in the area. It's like, if you want room service, there's no room service. I'm sorry. But we have a tie-up with this restaurant. You can order through this giant mirror thing. And yeah, this was all automated. And in fact, they never cleaned my room in the 1 week I was there. If I wanted to get cleaning, I could go to the giant mirror. I could click on get mid-stay cleaning for $100. You can click on that and they would come and they would clean it. So that means that reduces the amount of cleaning staff they need as well. And bar, you know, a lot of hotels have bars. They had an automatic bar as well, right? So it was just a bunch of bottles and all the bottles have a little pipe in it. And you just click on which bottle you want, which like alcohol you want and like a glass. And then like it pipes it into your glass. I've seen this before in restaurants in like, I think in New York, I saw it in a restaurant. But yeah, this was a practically automated hotel. The only staff I saw the entire time was a maintenance guy and cleaning staff. And given that they didn't have to clean the rooms every day, the number of cleaning staff they also needed would have been less. And when I had to check out the automatic mirror thing, it basically said, "Hey, Sahil, you have to check out. Click here to check out." And I clicked there to check out. And it said, "Put this code on the keypad to alert our cleaning staff to come and clean your room." So then, yeah, that's it. That was checkout. And if I wanted, you know, I didn't have to negotiate with anyone to get delayed check-in. They said like, "Oh, if you want delayed check-in, pay this much." And yeah, delayed check-out. So yeah, it was practically an automated hotel. I ran the numbers in my head as well, if you want to hear them, on how much it would cost, but yeah, and how much they would save.
This is extremely fascinating, man. When I first read your WhatsApp message where we discuss all these things, you said a fully automated hotel. And I was like, okay, that's doable. You'll have a key card or you'll have something on your phone, just like you can open a Zip card or a Zoom card. You can open the room and stuff like that. But this is next level of automation. And the other thing that ran through my mind when I first read the message is, great for the Western markets, great for markets like Vegas and New York, New Orleans, and a bunch of places where there are a lot of exhibitions, a lot of professional crowd that's coming in because they want something functional. They don't want any frills or anything like that. As long as there's alcohol and a clean room, you're good to go. So it works there, but I don't think it can work in India. And I have a very simple reason why it can't work in India, right? The first thing that we need to automate, or it's already automated and we need to take the people out of those jobs, is two things. One, elevator operators. I don't know why they exist. I don't know why they're there, but they're there, right? So unless we automate that first or take out the human being from that process, I don't think we're getting to automated hotels. And the second thing is, you know, when you enter these malls, these are, you know, these parking meters, or you have to click a button, get a ticket. But there's somebody just sitting just pressing a button for you, right? So when I think about these things, I just feel like this is not happening in India. We are 1.3 billion people. There are enough and more people who want to do these jobs. And therefore, probably doesn't make sense in India. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, so I thought about this as well. And I thought, like, can this happen in India? So I ran through the numbers. And also, so first of all, you know, to answer your question, I think this will have to be for a more expensive crowd. But at the same time, a more expensive crowd does want more handholding. So it's I don't know.
The expensive crowd in India comes with certain level of entitlement. Have you seen how they interact with the hotel staff and the people there? Yeah. It's as if they've like paid off and like if, as if they own the hotel, right? Like the fact that I'm staying there for 3 nights, I need top-notch service. I don't know how that work. Okay, right. With that, we've spent 15 minutes already on all these topics about small, you know, nitty-gritties of your experience in the US. Let's move on. Let's talk about the health snack segment in India. This is a very, very interesting segment that I think is on the verge of a big inflection point. I think it's going to be a huge market over the next 5-7 years. And what I want to do is just, you know, talk about why do I think this market is pretty huge. And specifically, I'm talking about healthy snacks and not the healthy food industry, which itself is pretty big. But I don't think that's where a lot of interesting opportunities are. Healthy snacks is where a lot of interesting opportunities are. So the first thing that we need to understand, and again, we've spoken about this in the food processing episode, is there's a huge growth in food processing and the demand for processed food because of lifestyle changes, right? We are working a lot more. Both the husband and wife, both the family members are working. Therefore, the demand for processed food is going to increase. If you look at it from the overall consumption of the agricultural produce that we then convert to processed food, it stands at 10%. In the US, it stands at 40-50%, right? Basically, any developing country, developed country that you look, are processing a lot more of their agricultural produce compared to India. And this sort of goes back to the female sort of labor participation. I know it's dwindling. I'm still hopeful that this goes back up and both the couple are actually working and contributing to the economy. And if that happens, the need for processed foods is going to increase, right?
Here's a fun, not a fun stat, but an interesting stat. It's actually female participation is better in rural areas than it is in urban areas because the families which have more money are the ones who are unwilling to allow their women to work because they think like, oh, we have enough money. So then, you know, why allow them? Because I actually know a couple of people like that where they got married into rich families and then they weren't allowed to work.
Yeah, it's a touchy topic, right? And we might face some backlash on this because you're using those words of not allowing women to work.
But it is what it is, right?
Especially in the rich sort of families where the direct question comes to why do you need to work, right? We are earning enough and there's enough income coming in. Why do you need to work? But the flip side to the argument is that person could contribute so much to the economy and could contribute so much to her career, but because of those, you know, patriarchal system that we have, it's unfortunate. But yeah, so coming back to the need for processed foods, I think is going to increase. Within that, I think you can think of it as two different parts, right? There's one, the actual meals that we consume, the breakfast, lunch, dinners, and then the snacks that we consume. I think the obsession that India has with freshly cooked food, because a lot of, regardless of social strata, we've always had freshly cooked food through either food vendors or, you know, your families who are helping you, your mothers and wives that are taking care of the household and making sure everybody gets fresh cooked food. I think that obsession is not going to go out anytime soon. It's probably going to get replaced by the Swiggies and the Cloud Kitchens and the Zomatos and more interesting ideas there. But this is not where packaged food is going to come in. Like in the US, you can actually buy, there's so much ready to eat stuff. There's so much stuff that you can just pour like hot water and it's ready to be eaten like a proper meal. I don't think that happens in India. What happens in India, I think, is the snack segment is going to grow. That's where it's very difficult to get freshly sort of made snacks. But the snack industry itself is pretty huge. And the third element to this is post-COVID, this whole obsession with health, this whole awareness with, you know, eating healthy and being fit. And if you look at Gen Z and the impact of social media and the impact of everybody being on Instagram, everybody wanting to look good, I think all of that is going to trickle down to the need for healthy foods and the preferences are going to change. And a bunch of reports that are out there sort of confirm this. There's a report by Avendus Capital that talks about how the healthy food segment in India is going to be a $30 billion industry by 2025, 2026. The food processing industry in India is supposed to grow to $500 billion market in the next 5-6 years. And 10% of that food, today at least, is 10% of the food that is processed is in the health food category in India, versus in the US and other Western countries, it's between 30 to 40%. So while the kind of healthy foods that we're going to eat are not going to be same as US, but the preference to move towards healthy foods, I think that's going to remain and that's going to keep increasing. So these are some reasons why I think, yeah.
So can I just give an example of like my family, like me and my wife, right? But I think what you kind of describes me and my wife perfectly. Where we're both very obsessed with health and fitness. We work out every day. We are very obsessed with it. My wife is very obsessed with the kind of food that we eat. So and that's, like you said, it's freshly cooked food. Sometimes we have momos that are frozen, but most of the time it's like very fresh, very healthy food. But at the same time, if you come to our house, you won't find a single unhealthy snack. There won't be like a chocolate hidden away somewhere. There won't be anything like that. The only thing that you'll find in our house are healthy ice cream, which I'm assuming you're going to talk about. You'll find healthy makhana chips, pop chips, like all that kind of, like high protein chips, like all that kind of stuff is what you will find at our house. I think we are the exact target audience that this segment, healthy snacks, is focusing towards.
100%. And if you add that element of the D2C, you know, e-commerce proliferation that's happened, where you don't really need to go out and find these brands here and there and get them home. You're literally sitting at home on your, you know, on your phone. You're literally ordering this whenever you want, right? So I think that's given a big push to these new native brands that have come up in this healthy snack category. And that brings me to an important point, right? When I was doing the research on this, okay, the industry preferences are moving. These are, you know, whatever said and done, these are FMCG goods. And there have been giant companies that have been built in the FMCG segment, in the FMCG segment in India. Why do I think there will be new opportunities, right? Why will a ITC or an Adani Wilmar or Godrej not just capture this opportunity? I think the reason is pretty simple. I think there's this famous sort of framework that was developed by, I think, Clay Christensen, or I might get the name wrong, but how they talk about when the industry is mature, there are small little segments that pop up that are too small for the large companies to focus on. And that's where newer startups and newer companies come in and try and attack that market. And with time, that segment keeps growing bigger, and so do these companies. I think we are seeing that exact play happen here. And the other thing that I think why these large companies are not going to be able to switch and pivot that easily is because they have a sort of brand image that's already out there, right? I can't imagine a Frito-Lay, Pepsi coming up with like a healthy chips, because I know what kind of chips they've made already, the Lay's, and how unhealthy they are, right? So there's a certain brand image that's attached to it, which is easier for a new brand to come and establish as a, which is, and that's why it's easier for a new brand to come in and establish themselves as a healthy snack or a healthy food company.
So I just want to add one thing over here, is that The strategy that you're talking about, there's a really good book called Seven Powers by an author called Hamilton Helmer. And in that, he talks about these seven different strategies that you can take, seven powers that you have. And one of those powers is called counterpositioning. And that's exactly what you're talking about, where these healthy snacks are counterpositioned against the other kind of snacks that are there. And that is a power that the existing brands cannot fight very easily. And therefore, they have a power in their strategy.
Yeah. So we've established why this is going to be a big segment, why this is a growing segment, why this is going to be a big segment. We've established why newer opportunities are going to come in. I just want to spend like a minute or two to talk about what the government is doing on this. I don't know if people have listened to our food processing episode, but the government's focus on food processing has been crazy since this new government came in 2014. I've actually been to a couple of these large food processing fairs or exhibitions that happen in India, in Delhi. These are huge. And the number of, companies that are coming in and actually promoting what they're doing and the investments that are coming into this space are quite a lot. There have been, I think, when the government came in 2014, there were two mega food parks in the country. In August 2021, there were 22 mega food parks in the country that were functioning, and this is going to go up to 40 in the next year or two. So these are mega food parks. What that basically means is the entire value chain from raw materials and, harvesting to, the raw materials to processing to final processing, packaging, all of these things are in one place, and hence it's easy to manufacture these goods. So a huge, huge sort of push in the food processing industry, and there's 100% FDI that's allowed in the automatic route. It's important to understand the difference between automatic route and approval route. Automatic is you don't need to get any approvals from the Indian government, and that is significantly better experience than getting approvals from the Indian government, right?
So what are you saying? Working with the Indian government is so easy, and there's no effort in it at all.
Yeah, it's only if the food products, and I'm not even going to respond to that sarcastic comment, because everybody knows the fun that is working with the Indian government. The only thing that is under the approval route in FDI is the food products that are manufactured and produced are going to be sold purely through e-commerce. I think there is an approval route there. I will link an article if people who are really interested can go and figure out what are the differences. I'm not going to go spend too much time on that. Okay, so we've spoken about what the market looks like, what's the demand, why the demand is there, what's the Indian government doing. Now let's talk about some of the interesting companies that are being built in this space. My personal favorite in terms of how they're branding it, how they're doing content marketing around this, the founder being out there talking about healthy food, is the Whole Foods Food. Yeah. I mean, you would have guessed that, right? I'm obsessed. Yeah. I'm obsessed not just with their products. I like their products and I've tried most of their products, but I'm obsessed with how they are executing. I think this is one of the best execution plays that I've seen using content, using building a D2C brand. They've raised about $5 million from Sequoia. 2021, their turnover was around 5 crores. 2019-20, the turnover was 78 lakhs. So that's a huge jump already. I'm predicting at least a 3x increase this year. They're going to end the 2021-2022 with 15 crores in turnover, because remember 2021 was also hit by pandemic, right? While there was a lot more e-commerce that happened, but it was at the end of the day hit by a pandemic, right?
But also one more thing is what I've heard is that they're also trying to get into exports, which I think will do very well for the Whole Truth Foods, because this kind of product, I think, will do very well in the export market with this kind of marketing as well.
Yeah. So I think the only challenge when it comes to healthy snack is the preservation of it, right? A lot of the snacks that we eat are unhealthy because of the preservatives that go into it to increase the shelf life from, 1 month to 6 months to 1 year to whatnot. And the reason why that's important is because perishables are a very, very hard business to deal with. You have this entire supply chain that takes the inventory to the end consumer, to the retail chains. And if those don't sell, you have to get it back. You have to, do recycling, and you have to do a bunch of different things. So perishable is the only reason why I think exports is slightly tricky, but I'm absolutely on board with the idea that a lot of these young D2C brands are going to export to Middle East, are going to export to Southeast Asia, probably Europe if you can get the taste preferences right and stuff like that.
But dude, you know Vadham Teas, right? Vadham Teas is one of the D2C success stories in India, and they're doing 90% exports. And I actually spoke to another founder of a very young company. I can't remember what the name of the company was. They were basically making dehydrated fruits, right?
Yeah.
And they were focused entirely on an export strategy. Yeah. I guess dehydrated fruits doesn't have a shelf life. So
exactly. Longer shelf life for sure. There are companies that are in the similar segment. They're using the combination of nuts and you know, good kind of sugar or dates and jaggery, and coming up with snack bars and coming up with, you know, nutty trail mixes and stuff like that. We've had one of them on another podcast that we did with Ghana, DRB Foods Nutty Gritties, right? I think they're doing 50-70 crores in turnovers just selling a combination of different well-packaged, good branded nuts and trail mixes, right? So that's a huge industry in itself.
Dude, I would say even Soulful Foods would come under the healthy foods category. That was an episode we did about 6 months ago, 9 months ago.
Yeah.
That would also come under there. Where are you going next, Siddharth? Let's see.
Yeah. I was going to go to Soulful, but there's Yoga Bar. I think they are sort of the earlier ones that came into this. They've raised about $12 million in funding. They have about 50 crores in turnover from what I could check last year. I think this is going to go significantly higher this year. Yeah.
I'm a significant consumer of Yoga Bar. I'm a very significant consumer of Yoga Bar. I have their protein bars like way too much. But yeah,
it's important to now talk about the segments within this, right? I have more companies that I want to talk about, but within healthy food segment, and this is a confusion that's often sort of played by the marketers, you know, really smart marketers can figure this out, is one, there is true healthy food, right? Which is genuinely healthy. And then there is healthier than the current alternative, right? There's a two different sort of segments within that. And I think a lot of these pop chips and other kinds of brands are the healthier alternatives, right? Better than products, better than the existing products. There are segments that are now being built which are truly healthy, right? Like when you talk about whole truth food, they're trying to build a truly healthy food segment. These are not, you know, chips that are now healthier. And the other thing that's important to understand in this better than segment is by no way these are, you know, significantly healthier, or this you can't just consume this guilt-free. One of the examples that I saw, and I'm frustrated because I can't find this article, but I read a fantastic Substack newsletter by a person from India who wrote this on the whole healthy snacks industry, and how a lot of these new age healthy snack players, what they do is they reduce the oil content. Let's say Frito-Lay's has 100 grams of oil, for example, and this is just a random example. What this another company is going to do is make that to 50 grams of oil. Now, when you down it, you know, when you take it down to 50 grams of oil, it's not like the taste is going to be same, because otherwise Frito-Lay would love to do it, right? They'll love to reduce the oil content and actually have the cheaper raw material prices. The thing is, the taste goes away. And when the taste goes away, you're not going to get repeat customers. So what they do is they pump up something else that's unhealthy, right? They pump up the sugar content. They pump up something sodium. Sodium, whatever that is, right? And therefore, they're able to claim, hey, 78% less fat. Sure, but you're adding a lot more things that are actually unhealthy. And this is, I'm going to come back to this because there's a business idea behind this, that a fantastic business opportunity behind this. But okay, so it was important to understand there's better than alternative. That's a segment. And there's a truly health food segment that's happening in India. Within the health food segment, within these two segments, there's a customer segmentation that you could potentially do, which is the adult and the kids, right? The kids food segment in India is again proliferated with a bunch of products that are just heavy on sugar, because you can get kids addicted to sugar very easily, right? The Bonvitas of the world, the Horlicks of the world, the Boosts of the world, they are Milo. Pure sugar. They're just sugar, right? And the kids love it because it's sugar, right? So there are alternatives that are coming up, thinking about what kind of macronutrients and micronutrients that a kid needs, and can you design good products around it? There's a company called Slurp Farm that makes these mixes for chilas, you know, beetroot chila and you know, high on protein, moong dal chila and stuff like that. There's another company called Gladful that are making protein cookies and a bunch of other things related to protein. These are all sort of, you know, early stage companies, seed stage, Series A. Slurp Farm is funded by Fireside. I think they've raised about $10 million Last year, their revenue was about 6.5 crores. Gladful, I couldn't pick up the numbers because the financials didn't have it. So I'm assuming they're going to file it this year. But the reason why these numbers are important is because if you'll see, all of them are in this, you know, 1 to 10, 15, 40, 20 crore category. If they've been around for 4 or 5 years, they're probably at the 40, 50 crore mark. Very, very early stage, given this is a $30 billion market that we're talking about.
Yeah. You know, by the way, can I tell you a funny story?
Yeah.
So when I lived in London, I once went to a vegan restaurant with a friend, with a German friend. And I ordered something. And then on the menu, I saw a vegan pancake. And my German friend ordered the vegan pancake. And it came. And you know what it was? It was chilas.
Oh, chilas.
It was chilas. Okay. It was literally chilas. And I looked at it and I was like, what the hell? They're charging £10 for basically chilas. And I was just like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
But can I guess one of the categories you're going to talk about, healthy ice cream, or like healthier ice cream in your words, right?
Yeah.
In the healthier ice creams, there are going to be two major brands. There's going to be Notto, right? Notto, I recently got drinks with the CEO of Notto. And if that's something that people want us to get the the promoters of Notto, that's something that I can try to do. Notto is doing really well, and they've expanded across the country in a lot of different cities. A big challenge for Notto is on the operation side is basically
cold storage. Chain. Yeah, we've spoken about this. The cold chain, yeah. And we are in the peak summers right now, and I've heard stories of these Kirana shops and a lot of these people have just stopped stocking any ice creams because 2 hours of power cut and their entire inventory is dead. Right? Because the ice creams can't survive the 2 hours of power cut and they don't have the generator capabilities and stuff like that. It's also impacting the medicine segment and the vaccination segment or the vaccine segment and stuff like that, which is, you know, significantly more important than the ice creams that I consume. But the cold chain infrastructure in India is definitely an opportunity in itself. We've done an episode on that 2-3 episodes ago. I'm going to link that in the show notes as well.
But Notto has raised how much? It's raised about 5 million. I can't remember the number right now.
Notto. Notto has raised 1.2 million over 3 rounds.
Okay.
So they're very early stage still.
Yeah. The second company that's raised is Goodfettle. And they've raised an undisclosed amount of money. And the founder of Goodfettle is actually from my school. And we order so much from Goodfettle and Notto that my wife has actually become really good friends with the founder of Goodfettle. So if we want to get Goodfettle as well, we can get them on. For people who want to know what to get from them, I love they have these Goodfettle bites. So they're basically ice cream that's covered with chocolate and they have different flavors. I love the hazelnut flavor and I think the dark chocolate flavor of these Goodfettle bites. Really, really good.
Okay, just to clarify, none of this is promotion. This entire episode, we're not getting money from any D2C brand to actually bring their name. This is just from our research, the companies that we found. Basically, I think what Sahil spoke about, right? Ice cream is one segment. Chips and, you know, these healthier than options of chips and popcorns and a bunch of other things. That's another segment there. We're seeing pop chips. We are seeing baked chips. We are seeing there's a company called To Be Honest that makes, veggies converted into chips. They went to Southeast Asia and saw these papaya chips and you know, pineapple chips and jackfruit chips. So they've made beetroot chips, right? So To Be Honest is another company. So there's another segment. There's beverages, which is a segment in itself. We've spoken about non-alcoholic beers and kombuchas and stuff like that. These are all healthier than alternatives. And in an ideal world, you would not consume any processed foods, right? That's what people keep talking about. The longer the shelf life, the shorter your life is going to be. That's a tweet that I've seen. But at the end of the day, these are convenient foods and people are going to keep consuming them. So think about the segments that you want to go after in... and there's peanut butter. The peanut butter story in India is insane. There have been companies with 20, 30, 40 crores in turnover that have just come up in focusing on peanut butter. Pintola. Pintola is one of the brands that came on Shark Tank as well. And these are unsweetened peanut butters and stuff like that. But the whole point comes back to if you're obsessed with food, if you know what happens and what goes into food, there is a clear opportunity to pick up a segment that you think you can add an interesting sort of bring an interesting product out that's healthier than or a truly healthy product and run the D2C marketing playbook around that.
And honestly, so when it comes to food, you don't have to put in the investment to set up the manufacturing because most of the processes that you have thought about you can get somebody else to do the processes. So, for example, the dehydrated fruit founder that I spoke to, they were not doing any of the processing themselves. They were buying their fruits from somewhere. They were sending the fruits to some dehydrating facility. They were dehydrating it for them. They were packaging it for them, and they were sending it. And they were basically a marketing company. And when you speak to a lot of these other, when you talk about chips, you talk about maybe even ice cream. I'm not sure about ice cream, but there are facilities. You just give them the recipe. You have to work on the recipe. You give them the recipe. They do all the processing for you. They give you the final product, and you basically just market that product. And it's the marketing and it's the recipe creation that is the hard part. The actual processing and the production is not that hard from what I have seen by talking to people.
100% true, 100% true. So when I first thought about it, my initial thought was it's very difficult, high barriers to entry, because not everybody can produce these things. But when I read more about it, I think there is a set of maybe 10 processes, from extrusion to liquefying to drying to whatnot, which a lot of manufacturers in India already have those capabilities, right? You just need to work with these people to get your product out there. As you said, the investment probably goes into working with these food technologists and food consultants that can help you get the recipe right, which is a big, you know, piece in itself. And then the marketing aspect, again, a big piece in itself. So no way we are saying that it's easy to create these brands, but the manufacturing is not going to be that big a trouble. You still have to work with the vendors and you still have to figure out vendors, but that capability exists. And that's one of the opportunities that are out there, right? I think food processing is one of those sectors where the existing players are not going to be able to scale up to the demand. So maybe there's something that you can do in the manufacturing space, which is focused more on the healthier ingredients, or processing healthier ingredients, or using more healthy sort of alternatives of processing, right? For example, air frying and stuff like that, compared to deep frying that a lot of chips go through. If you can build the infrastructure for air frying and these, you know, whatever I... however you call it, just the healthier alternatives of making these products, I think that's an interesting segment from an opportunity perspective that you could potentially get into. The other opportunity that I thought about is this whole food processing sector. When I looked at, let's go back to Four Sigmatic, right? Four Sigmatic needs a ton of mushrooms, and those ton of mushrooms need to be, you know, processed and mixed and whatnot to be made into coffee. Who do you think produces Four Sigmatic? Which country do you think produces Four Sigmatic coffee?
Probably India. I don't know.
Or China.
Indonesia. I don't know.
China.
Oh, yeah.
Like usual. Like, China has this huge, like, you know, mushroom farming setup and the processing setup and whatnot. I think the same thing can be done in India with the set of, you know, the right policies, the right capital infusion and stuff like that. But India as a food processing destination is a very interesting concept, because we produce a large variety of grains, fruits, and vegetables that can actually be consumed for food processing within India. A lot of it is also wasted, right? And the thing with food processing is all the stuff that you can't sell because it looks ugly, it's, you know, slightly pulpy and stuff like that, can actually be used for food processing. That's where the magic is, right? The tomato ketchup that you're eating is probably from the shittiest looking tomatoes. It's not the you know, the nice round red tomatoes that you want to go out and buy. So from that perspective, I think India is a destination for food processing exports, and somebody who can make that bridge gap happen, like we spoke about in the episode with Sajid, this whole SaaS transactions marketplace, which is happening in the fashion industry, the apparel industry, with Fashionza targeting, you know, the external, you know, international buyers with a SaaS solution, saying that, hey, we'll help you, you know, just click a button and everything is going to be ordered, and you're going to see transparently where it's being bought from and how it's being done. The same thing can be applied in the food processing sector itself.
Interesting that you mentioned the shittiest food, because when I was in college, I worked with this NGO called Food Not Bombs for like 4 years. And basically what we used to do at that time is we used to take all the rejected vegetables from grocery stores, and we used to cook it, and we used to give it to homeless people. And honestly, once you cook it, you can't tell the difference. That used to be my lunch for 4 years on every Saturday. So I used to eat it all the time, and there's nothing wrong with it. And yeah, that's a really good point that you make. The second thing that I want to mention, and you spoke about Sajid's episode. Now, let's think back to the framework and what part of the consumer stack would be the ones who are buying these products, right? Now, Sajid spoke about India 1, India 2, India 3.
India 1 Alpha.
India 1, yeah, that's exactly. Within India 1, there's India 1 Alpha. And in my opinion, that is who you're targeting for this segment.
Right now.
Big...
Right now.
Right now. Because they have the money. The question is, how big is India One Alpha? Just one second, let me just open up his... in his episode and in his report, Sajith mentions that India One, which is a much larger segment, is about 110 million people. That's a pretty big market. But India One Alpha, which is the cream of the cream of India One, the richest of India One, living in Bombay, Delhi, Bangalore, Pune, you know, the kind of people who are consuming Netflix, the kind of people who can afford to buy raw pressery every day, that is 10 million people. 10 million people is a much smaller than 110 million people, but that's still a very large market. And that's still a large number of people who can spend money on this. Like, for example, I consume Yoga Bar every day, which is maybe something I should not be doing. But yeah, because I'm part of India One Alpha, and I can afford to do it. And there are 10 million other people in India who can do that.
What a flex, Sahil. but okay, no, I completely agree. I think it's a fairly small market. But one of the things that I read when a lot of these founders were interviewed for a bunch of different articles, everybody kept saying that tier two, tier three has also come up to, you know, as a demand center for this market. And then this goes back to Sajid's point. The India One Alpha also resides in tier two, tier three cities. The India One also resides in tier two, tier three cities. I think what this does is it's a small enough market for them to sort of play around, get their product offering right, get their marketing right, get their distribution right. And slowly and surely, where as in when the aspirations are already there, as in when the income increases for this India One and maybe you're the top layer of India Two, a lot of these products are going to be consumed. I think there's an interesting case study to do in terms of the pricing strategy a lot of these companies will follow, right? If you price it too high, you sort of keep the other segments out, but you can probably have a healthier, profitable business, less in turnover, but a profitable business. Somebody can go after slightly more mass market with an aggressive pricing. I think there's a pricing strategy that different startups are going to play different games here.
I think you can also go regional, right?
Yeah.
Right? Because healthy snacks for, let's say, Indore, where Indore is obsessed with poha, right? Some kind of a poha alternative in Indore, or, you know, like a South Indian snack for Tamil Nadu, for Kerala. So I think you can also go regional so that, you know, a really pan-India brand won't attack your market because they won't be able to match those flavors, et cetera, et cetera. And it's something you can have a healthy, very good tasting, small brand, but that does well, that's profitable.
Yeah. And I think there are a bunch of recipes and dishes that are hidden in regional parts of the country that probably only make sense for that particular weather, which is why they're limited to that region. And there can be brands built around that. An interesting story on this whole regional to national or global thing is the millet story, right? Soulful Foods spoke about it. This whole foxtail millet and quinoa and I don't know, there are just jowar millet and bajra millet. These are all millets that already existed in the Indian culture if you go back in the day, right? This is what people used to consume. And these were significantly healthier version than the wheat and rice that the entire country started consuming maybe in when the Green Revolution happened and for years after that. And now we're going back to millets. Now we're going back to, you know, products that are made out of these millets because we understand the nutritional profile of these things, right? So a lot of these regional, you know, grains or products can actually go national and in some cases go global because millet farming in India is a pretty big thing and there's a huge export market for millets. So if somebody wants to do that as an opportunity, right, just organize the millet farming in India and figure out the buyers in the Western countries and Southeast Asian countries wherever millets can't be grown very easily. I think that's a market in itself from a trading, export, import perspective.
Can I give another example? So, which is very similar to what you just said. So one of my friends, he's building a business out of jackfruit, right? And when he started this, one of the reasons, I asked him a question, like, why are you using jackfruit? He said that 90% or 95% of jackfruit in India is wasted, right? Because you have these giant jackfruits, they fall on the ground and nobody's really interested in eating it. I think jackfruit is a very popular dish in South India, in like Kerala, Tamil Nadu, those kind of places. So it's a regional fruit, which he's now trying to incorporate into recipes that he can sell across the country. And probably recipes that he can also he can sell across the world. He's gotten a lot of interest from healthy food, meat alternative venture funds around the world who want to invest in him, right? Because so then this is something that he can export as well. So it goes back to that whole wastage of vegetables and fruits and stuff like that. Like jackfruit is one of the ones that's wasted the most. What else is wasted a lot? What else can you then process and make it into a higher level, which you can sell with much higher gross margins. Food processing has very high gross margins because the raw material is so cheap.
Yeah. What I find funny about this, you know, this comment that of yours is we've practically spoken about all the other brands and sort of promoted them because we're speaking about them with their brand names and stuff. But when it came to your friend's brand, you decided to not name it at all, which is sad for your friend. But I know the brand that he's talking about, Eat With Better. Go check out their products. I really like them. I like the jackfruit stuff that they've made. Pretty interesting.
They have ready-to-eat meals with Siddharth, you said, will not work. But I'm hoping it does. And there, some of their jackfruit stuff is really good. The Malai Kari jackfruit, I'm a big fan of. You should try it out.
I'm just going to clarify. I think anything related to food, if done right, can work in India. It's just the segment may not be as large, right? That was my only comment. If you want to build a large brand, and especially from a perishability perspective, maybe snacks are easier than the ready-to-eat because the perishability becomes a concern when it comes to ready-to-eat. Okay, now, one of my favorite ways to looking at a market or an interesting opportunity is the infrastructure play, right? Like, I absolutely love the fact that once an industry is growing, there are going to be some unsexy infrastructure businesses that are just going to grow along with it and which will generally have higher barriers to entry. One of those companies is called Anka Sumor, AnkaSumor. Now, what they do, they're funded by Fireside, which is, I think, a brilliant strategy by Fireside to fund this company, is because they are the company that helps these emerging brands get into supermarkets. If you've heard the episode that we did with Jiru or the other, you know, consumer goods that we've spoken about.
Even Soulful Foods spoke about this.
Getting into supermarkets is extremely difficult, right? Getting shelf space is extremely difficult. It's extremely expensive. You have to negotiate with these brands.
They have a listing fee.
Exactly. They have a listing fee. You need to get to the right category manager. You need to convince them. There's a lot of like bandwidth of a founder that goes into figuring out this distribution. What Anka Sumor does is it's plug and play, right? And an emerging brand can go to them and say that, hey, I want to be listed in certain supermarkets and stuff like that. Anka Sumor already has existing relationships, probably already has existing contracts, and they have shelf space that they pay. I'm just guessing their business model right now. Shelf space that they pay on a regular basis, or they have a discounted rate, and they can keep sort of rotating brands and see what works. And something that works can then sort of, you know, push harder and do the experimentation there. Because when you are starting out, you don't even know if this is going to be picked up in a store, right? And the other services that these guys can provide is they can have a team of people that are planted at these supermarkets for tastes and trials. Everybody who's gone to supermarkets have probably seen newer brands doing taste trials and stuff like that. A brand whose core focus is on, you know, manufacturing and marketing this product and getting the recipe right. This whole distribution aspect of it and doing tasting and getting the product picked up is a lot of hassle. So they've made it plug and play. Right. They do about 9 crores in turnover. Again, I would bet on this company. Right. I haven't seen anything, any competitor that's been funded. They've been funded by Fireside. I think they raised about 13 crores, October 2021. I think that's a very interesting play. Thoughts on this?
I have so many thoughts on this, but, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind, first of all, is that all the consumer brand startups that we've spoken to, the founders that we've spoken to, first of all, they speak about listing fee, right? So listing fees can be very expensive. You have to give listing fee per store that you want to list in all of these modern retail. So if that takes it out, okay, that's a huge, huge thing. But the second thing is also collections. Collections from Indian companies on average is terrible. So, right, can Anka Sumor take out that collection part of it? Because Anka Sumor, I guess, is going to do it for a bunch of brands. And I guess if a bunch of brands stop sending their products to the supermarket, then maybe they have some more negotiating leverage and therefore they get their money faster. And therefore, maybe the brands also get their money faster. I don't know, but that's the second thing that comes to my mind.
Very important point, right? The fact remains, if you're a young brand, negotiating with the big bazaars of the world that doesn't exist anymore, I'm sorry, but other supermarkets that still exist, if you're negotiating with them, Food Hall or also doesn't exist, right? Because it was under the big bazaar brand. I don't know. It was the same family. I don't know if it exists.
Biyanis, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it exists.
That's a big, good question. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. That's an interesting opportunity. The whole gourmet store, I have a few thoughts on that. We'll get to it at the end. But
because even Nature's Basket sold to Goenka.
Exactly. right? So this whole gourmet store, I don't think it flew as they were expecting, which tells you that you can't really build these large physical spaces catering to an India One alpha, right? Going into a food hall, like you had to feel that you needed a lot of money to enter that place, right? Because anything that you picked up is going to be super expensive there. I have a very, very funny story. I'm going to plug it in here. I remember going to food hall in Gurgaon, and they generally have cafes along with the supermarket, right? And they have really good food, by the way, fresh food, really good food. And I was eating there and I was thirsty. So I went to the supermarket, where everything is stored. And I picked up a bottle of water and I looked at the price and I started drinking it, right? And it said 50 rupees and I started drinking it. It was Evian, right? It was Evian. If whoever doesn't know, like I did not, apparently a Swedish Alps water, whatever, it's obscenely expensive in Europe and whatnot. So one of my friends who saw me drinking this, he was like, are you sure you want to buy this? And I already had the water by then. I'm like, why? What's the issue? He's like, dude, this is like £5 or £7 in Europe. I'm sure it's, you know, pretty expensive here. And that thing, that bottle of water, which was 500 ml, was 500 rupees, right? And I was like, no way am I paying for 500 rupees. There's absolutely no way, because the price, the MRP was scratched off and it genuinely looked like 50. So I went to, like a true Marwari, I went to the checkout counter with full transparency and honesty, convinced him that I at no circumstance can pay you 500 rupees for 500 ml. This is against my principles. This is your fault because it was scratched up. Like I did not know it's, you know, 500 bucks. Good guy, let me go. I just could not. I could not pay against my principles to pay that much for water that's available for 10 rupees outside. But okay, coming back to this.
On this one small thing is that I think in Food Hall and Nature's Basket, I think their problem was that they were not going for India Alpha. They were going for India Alpha Alpha.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
They were going for the creme de la creme of it. Like Food Hall, even I thought was like, oh man, like why is it so expensive? And 500 rupees for water, like that's alpha alpha. That's not even alpha.
Exactly, right? And a lot of these were imported, which I get. Like India has been obsessed with imported goods. India One alpha probably more, alpha alpha probably more, because it's a status symbol. You're going out and, you know, buying at Food Hall and stuff like that. But a lot of these things don't need to be imported, right? A lot of these things can be manufactured in India. So that's an interesting way of looking at, you know, what are these food products that are being imported in India and what can I make in India, right? Certain kind of cheeses, for example, a lot of cheese gets imported from France and other European nations. Can we actually make them in India itself? Because we have a healthy dairy industry in India, right? So that's another way to figure out where the opportunities are.
I've actually had some Indian made like fancy cheese. It's obviously not as good as the imported cheeses, but I think that industry is also nascent. It's just starting out.
But think about this, right? You know, it's not as good as imported because you've lived in a lot of these countries. You've consumed the cheeses there. But for somebody who's not had the same exposure, it's going to be a really good cheese for them anyways, right?
I think Amul has like Amul Gouda and stuff like that. I might be wrong. I've seen
Indian players getting into it. But okay, coming back to the infrastructure play, right? This whole Anka Samore play is really good because not only can you have leverage with the larger brands, and the original point actually started with, you know, when you're negotiating with a food hall or a big bazaar or any other large supermarket, these brands practically have no leverage, right? Like they are at the mercy of this big supermarket chain. So having a layer that can sort of aggregate a lot of these products is a genius play. It brings negotiation power, and what it also does is they can actually do a lot more data analytics and data crunching to figure out the credit opportunities. A lot of these manufacturers or these brands need credit because you need to put this product in a supermarket and you get paid 90 days later, 120 days later, 150 days later, right? So they can actually plug in the credit hole. Anka Samore is a very interesting opportunity. The other thing that I wanted to talk about, now this goes back to my experience of this whole, you know, organic food and you know, clean food and stuff like that. Back in 16, 17, I tried my hand at this. I realized I suck at it. This is not a good founder market fit. I decided to quit and I moved on from it. But that experience of trying to build something in the organic space taught me that it doesn't matter if your food is organic or not. You can get the licenses. You can get the testing done. Everything can be fixed, quote unquote, in India. I remember calling a government lab or a private lab and I, you know, started asking them questions on how do you what's the charge for it, how do you do the testing and whatnot. And at the end, the sales guy was like, no, you don't even have to send the products, right? Like, if you, yeah, we'll figure it out. So certification, proving authenticity, genuinely telling people if this is healthy or not is an interesting opportunity. How do you solve for it though?
Wait, before you go into that, the Indian government is actually coming out with grading, right? I just read this a couple of days ago. They're coming out with a grading system for all the snacks and all the food products, or processed food products.
And you know what? The really large processed food players are actually very, very happy, because what they need to do now is make certain tweaks, and then they can slap that label on top of that chips that we know is unhealthy by calling it, you know, healthier grade or whatnot, because it's just met certain conditions that the government has put out. So it's a very complex.
That's the same criticism I read everywhere. Yeah,
exactly. It's a very, you know, food is a very complex thing that you can't just standardize, right? Because when you talk about, you know, different kinds of nutrients, macronutrients, oil, sugar, it's a complex ballgame. But anyway, what I was coming back to is, how do you build this credibility? How do you build this trust with the audience? There's a company in the US called examine.com. Does millions of dollars, right? And they have a pure subscription business. What they do is no bullshit, just take the products and examine and lay down a lot of these things as to what these ingredients are. I don't know if you've seen the latest Whole Truth Food ads. Genius. Again, like, I really like their marketing strategy. So they did an ad where they're working with a scientist and they're talking about these, you know, different chemical names that you and I will read on this back of these products and we'll never understand what these are. And what he was doing in that ad was, oh, so it's just another word for corn syrup. Oh, it's just another word for XYZ, which is just unhealthy, right? So the brands start to confuse you with these ingredient lists. What examine.com does, I think they do it purely for nutritional products or supplements, is they'll go line by line. They actually do research and come back with results on how healthy this is, what kind of ingredients that they have, and give you an unbiased take. Because they are funded by the end consumer through subscriptions and they're not funded by advertisements, they can actually do that. So a similar service in India, probably led by one of the fitness influencers or people on YouTube. There's a guy called FitTuber, really good, you know, really good content. And he does something similar where he takes a lot of look at these products and talks about which is healthy, which is not healthy, what are the ingredients in there. Probably led by somebody like him, because you can figure out distribution. But building a service where, you know, the India One Alpha at least can get into a subscription, you know, worth 2,000 rupees a year, 3,000 rupees a year. We pay like, what, 7,000 rupees for Netflix for a healthy, you know, if somebody can actually break that down for me, I don't know. I may be able to pay, you know, 1,500, 2,000 a year to actually get a report on all these products, the new age products that call themselves healthy. I think that examine.com subscription-led model to build trust, to build credibility is going to be a very, very interesting opportunity.
Siddharth, they've wanted to talk about examine.com, I think, for the last year.
Exactly. I love the business.
To-do list for so long.
I love this business, and this was perfect. When I was going through the research, I was like, this is the point. This is where it makes sense, right? Examine.com is a fantastic business. People should check it out. What they do in the US is amazing.
What's a very similar website that I use a lot? It's called Outdoor Gear Lab. So they do the exact same thing for outdoor gear. The exact same thing for outdoor gear, except I think they earn their revenue through affiliate links. But yeah.
Interesting. I think this is what's happening in the healthy snacks segment. As I said, I'm still bullish on the healthy snacks, not so much on healthy foods. Healthy foods, I think, is going to be a more perishable, you know, more salad chains and maybe those popping up. But a truly large consumer products business or an FMCG business is probably going to be built in the healthy snacks segment. In the children segment, in the adult segment, maybe for certain, you know, health conditions, food for certain health conditions. There are so much innovation that you can do in that health condition thing, right? With diabetic and stuff like that is
insane. Yeah, I was like, we should like diabetes food, just like an entire business just built around diabetes food. That's it. Nothing else.
There's
that
actually
itself is a huge market in India. Yeah.
There's actually somebody I spoke to from ISB who's doing this. I don't know the name exactly. I will try and link it in the show notes. But they're doing this. They are, you know, coming up with a platform, or they have a platform where you can buy all these kinds of, you know, foods that are good for diabetic people. The opportunities in this. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I saw the ad in India or if I saw this ad in the US, but I saw this ad recently in the last 1 month where this person is saying like, oh, my father was diagnosed with diabetes. I didn't know. There was some very common food. They were like, oh, I didn't realize that I couldn't give him that food. And then, you know, I found out that I couldn't give him that food. You know, that kind of very like honest kind of marketing, content marketing would do really well for diabetes, for heart conditions, for hypertension, for, yeah, all of them.
Yeah. And there's a huge, huge potential for content marketing done well in this segment, right?
Yeah.
If you can bring transparency, one of the ideas that's also living rent-free in my head, and I think a lot more companies should do this, is Whole Truth Food and ID Foods both did this, where they put a drone or a camera within their manufacturing facility where whoever wants to come in, click and see what's happening in their manufacturing facility with different camera angles and stuff like that can do that. Right. This is when you can truly show that I'm not afraid of you actually checking out how we make the stuff that we make. Probably not possible if you're outsourcing the manufacturing, but both these people obviously control the manufacturing itself and hence can do this. But in general, I think content marketing, if done right, is a huge segment within the healthy food category.
Dude, I don't know if I ever told you this, but I once spoke to a founder of a milk brand and he was planning to add cameras to his pasture, I guess, so you can see how happy his cows are.
Yeah.
So yeah, he was planning to do that. But okay, so now let's jump into defense, right?
Yeah. No, that's not happening. One last brand that I want to mention is Open Secret, and the reason why I want to mention this is, like all the Marwadis out there, I don't know a Marwadi who's not obsessed with bhujia. Open Secret recently launched a healthy bhujia product. I haven't tried it. I'm trying to stay off bhujia because I know it's not a healthy product at the end of the day. But healthier bhujia is coming back to that point of, can you go back to food that we were already consuming, regional foods that we were already consuming, and make healthier alternatives out of it, right? The banana chips in Kerala, or the wafers that come from Gujarat, the Balaji wafers that come from Gujarat, and so many other regional foods. Can you make healthier alternatives of these namkeens or sweet dishes and whatnot? I think that's... the opportunities are endless, right? $30 billion industry, growing very fast. The export opportunities are there. The infrastructure plays there. There are multiple niche businesses that you can build, probably profitable. There is play for venture capital to come in. It's one of those segments that's ripe for disruption.
Dude, banana chips are you can give me banana chips anytime. And I love them so much. But, you know, I wanted to end this episode in a different way than we usually do. I wanted to end this episode by talking about some content that we consumed this last week that we really enjoyed. And I know I'm just bringing this on you, Siddharth, so I'm going to start. So I've been traveling a lot this last couple of weeks. And I downloaded a bunch of movies on my phone and I've been watching them. The movies that I watched this last week that I really loved were Blade 1, Blade 2, Blade 3. I don't know if you guys have ever watched it. So Blade was... they were big movies. Were they big? I don't know if they were even big. But they came out in the
last 90s. Person. I'm the last person you should speak to about movies. I'm absolutely zero knowledge in this.
Basically, he's a vampire hunter, right? And this came out in the late 90s, early 20s, and he is the coolest superhero. He's so much cooler. Wesley Snipes as Blade is one of the best superhero portrayals I've ever seen. He's a vampire hunter. I love them. Watch it. It's really good content.
Where's the business opportunity? Because if there's no business opportunity, I'm just going to cut this out.
No, man, no. It's just content. Content we enjoyed this last week. I can talk about books if you want.
No. Now that you've brought up a movie, I actually made it a point to watch this one movie called The Barbarians at the Gate. It's an interesting movie about corporate takeover. And, you know, and the reason why I watched this is because it was recommended on one of the podcasts where they were discussing Elon versus Twitter. Which reminds me, we are going to start a segment next week onwards on the content that we're not going to talk about in this episode, right? Elon versus Twitter is an overdone content. Everybody talks about it. That's the Bollywood gossip of the startup or tech world. I think it has zero impact on 95% of the people that consume this content. And our goal at Business Munchies is to give you content that you can actually take and make something out of it or add to your knowledge and probably helps at some point in time. The Elon versus Twitter debate is not going to help you. But I did watch a movie that tells you about how corporate takeovers are done. There was a company called, what was it called? It was a famous tobacco brand back in the 80s or 70s. Barbarians at the gate. Give me 1 second. What was it about? It's something with R. RJR Nabisco. Okay. So this movie is about the corporate takeover of RJR Nabisco. They had a huge tobacco segment. I think they are the inventors of Oreo and a bunch of other famous products. So huge billions of dollars worth of company, and how KKR, a private equity group, did a leveraged buyout, a hostile takeover of this company or something along those lines. So I watched that movie. So whoever's interested in how you know, the behind the scenes of how these companies are bought, that's an interesting movie. It's on YouTube. It's for free. I just looked at, it's for free. So go check it out.
You know, it's more famous as a book, right?
Most people that are listening to this will prefer the movie. I can vouch for that. Anyway, with that, I know we wanted to talk about defense, but we are not going to be able to do it this week. We are already at 1 hour, 15 minute mark. Slowly and surely, we are realizing that one, people like our deeply researched topics. So I think moving forward, what's going to happen is going to be one deeply researched anchor topic. And then, you know, a bunch of small little topics that we spoke about. I think that's going to be the format of the show. If you have feedback on the format of the show, please reach out to us. And if you like the content that we produce, please take a moment to review us on Spotify. You subscribe to us on YouTube, follow us on Instagram, follow us on Twitter. Do one of these things. Just do one of these things if you like our content. We are now actively promoting ourselves through micro content on all these platforms. So you can go watch out the clips from the episode on YouTube. You can see some interesting reels that we've made. We're making Twitter threads. We are doing a lot more with the podcast and breaking that into micro content pieces. So your feedback, your support goes a long way. Please do that. And we will see you next week.
You know, Siddharth, when people start, people who have listened to us on the podcast, and if they go to YouTube and they watch our videos, they will realize why we started a podcast. They will realize that we have a radio voice and that why we are not on TV. But yeah. Anyways, yeah, please, thanks for listening to the episode and have a great day. Siddharth, don't stop recording. I want to add one thing at the end.